Nice to see that almost everyone here was here last week. This is our third session in the exploration of developmental psychology. And it's a little bit different than what we did a year ago in our exploration of integral learning, where we offered a platform for presentations from many different approaches to knowledge. And we didn't try to synthesize very much, although we did have a kind of central paradigm that we were aware of, which is the Vedic paradigm. So now, what we're exploring is a different paradigm. The developmental psychology paradigm is, I think, best represented by the three texts that we're going to focus on. Sri Aurobindo's Psychology of Social Development, also known as the Human Cycle. Jean Gebser's The Ever-Present Origin, and Graves, Cowan, Wilbur, Spiral Dynamics. Now, why do we do this? I would suggest that we are now aware of the emergence of a new paradigm. We know that around 1770 there emerged the rational in a very strong way in our civilization, and that it has dominated and it has exfoliated, diversified. It has been the expression of what is quite obviously a human potential. And the theory of spiral dynamics is that in developmental psychology is that different human potentials emerge at different times in relation to various stimuli, conditions, life conditions. But they emerge in a kind of recognizable pattern. And so Sri Aurobindo pointed to this pattern of emergence and gave it considerable importance. So we know that Adam Smith and Hegel and various minds of the late 17th, early 18th, 19th century told us about democracy and capital. And this has to do with the welfare of societies. And Marx had to come along and notice that this emergence of that new paradigm was hindered by the previous aristocratic religious paradigm, and there had to be some kind of process of deconstruction there to really liberate human societies from that paradigm. And so on. Just to point out that we're not just exploring a theory, but we are engaged in a reality of social development. And what the mother has seen for Auroville and what Sri Aurobindo has theorized about is the emergence from that rational paradigm of an integral paradigm. A kind of spiritualized, intuitivized, subjective mind that is different from the rational subjective mind of the 18th century, in that it recognizes itself in everything. It is not analytical, it's a mind of identity. So the word integral means then, for this paradigm, recognizing the value of all the stages. And one of the things that each of these writers on the subject points out, and Gebser most strongly, is that each emergence is absorbed in the next. It doesn't go away. And so the real trick for the integral paradigm is to realize, and I mean really substantially realize, that the powers and potentials and forms of expression of each of the levels is ever present, and has its, it is valuable to the human species. They are all valuable. And so there is a way of looking at the developmental paradigm that is hierarchic, and the problem of that is that it tends towards rigid categorization and comparative judgments and so on. And that's the problem of the rational, as it looks at the possibility of the integral, but it falls back always into this pattern of comparative judgment. But the integral is supposed to be something different, and that is something we have to explore, because we're not really there, but it is there. So I wanted to recall a little bit from the theory of evolution and the philosophy of evolution, Bergson's idea that the rational mind gathers experience and data and theorizes and comes to an understanding, for example, of evolution, the diversification of species through processes of natural selection, and so on. And it thinks then that it has understood evolution. But of course, nobody understands evolution very well. And there are innumerable unsolved questions in the theory of evolution. But only someone who pushes the envelope realizes that there is all of that which is not understood. It's very easy to settle for categories. And that's the trick of the rational mind. So we can take these the theories of spiral dynamics, for example, as descriptive of final categories of understanding, just like we do everything else. Or we can try to integrate these theories, this way of understanding, into our own experience and use those categories as tools only for bringing ourselves into conscious contact with the realities that these things represent. These ideas merely represent realities that are dynamic. And so in the philosophy of evolution, we learn that nothing is permanent. There are no species per se. But there are, from time to time, patterns of repetition that go on long enough for there to be the impression of permanence. But in fact, the line from one to the other and up the ladder is continuous and ever-changing. So we pointed out in our philosophy of evolution course time and time again that 99.9% of all species are now extinct that have ever existed. So when we look at these, and then with the emergence of mind in the human species, there has begun another series of diversification of patterns and faculties that are all based upon previous species, patterns, and faculties, but are just variations upon those. And so evolutionary theory recognizes that the whole process of formation of life from species to species and socially between and among species is a process of cognition, that each one at each moment is learning something, and the behavior patterns are based upon what has been learned, and these patterns of learning get translated into patterns of behavior that form the basis of niches where species are able to persist successfully for 50 million to 50,000 years. And so it's generally understood now that cognition is something that's going on at every level. And that's remarkable to realize, but you read it in Dawkins, you read it in the most ultra-Darwinian, and you read it in Lawrence, and you read it in Capra. And so the idea that mind is an integral part of life and body is generally accepted nowadays. And that was not the case in 1920 when Sri Aurobindo said that that would eventually be the case. So I began 2 weeks ago trying to define the term meme. And I think this is one of those elusive concepts, sort of like gene. it's very difficult for the mind so far, for science, to figure out, to understand clearly what the relationship is between this structural substratum of evolving consciousness and the phenotype, all the behaviors that are actually observable. And one of the observations that we've come across repeatedly is that it's in the phenotype, it's in the behavior, it's in the society where the choice is made, where nature does her selection. And what gets reproduced then is what works out here. And the genes support that. Now, exactly where the connection is between the phenotype and the genotype is a huge mystery. And so from time to time, there's a flip-flop from one to the other. Right now, the phenotype is in front, and Because so much has been learned about genes, and it's just they don't tell us very much about what's really going on. So I suggested in that first meeting that the integral consciousness might actually perceive the identity of form and structure. That we might actually come to realize that there is no difference between matter and spirit. That there is not a duality between the genotype and the phenotype. The analytical mind is still finding particles and describing particles, but it's still not capable of really seeing the relationship, because when you focus on one level of structure, you leave out the other level. And this is the famous Heisenberg principle. So it's possible that the integral consciousness is truly integral and will be able to perceive the totality. So what Gebser says about integral consciousness is not the same as what Beck and Cowan say about integral consciousness, and neither one of them is the same as what Sri Aurobindo says about integral consciousness. But it's a meme, I would suggest. This human cycle and this spiral dynamics and that yet to be present on the table, ever-present origin, are mimetic expressions of an emerging paradigm. And I believe that you could take Beck and Cowan's eight levels, which are called value memes, and you could also call those paradigms. Now, just to create a little cognitive dissonance, which, as you may know, in educational theory is always a good thing to do, these guys say, memes manifest, or V-memes, value memes, manifest the core intelligences, memes manifest the core intelligences that form systems and impact human behavior, like theory of evolution and capitalism and religion. A value meme contains the basic package of thought, motives and instructions that determine how we make decisions and prioritize our lives. We've known, heretofore we have just called these value systems. Now we're calling them value memes. And we're doing that, I think, because different cultures at different times produce different forms of expression of these values, but whether it's medieval Christianity or medieval India or medieval Vietnam, it's the same emergent value system which is producing those structures, and so they all look a little bit different, but they all say the same thing. A meme occupies a human mind much like a parasite moves into the body and reorders the neurological equipment to fit its way of thinking. What do you think about that? Does the meme work like a parasite? And so this emergent integral meme that we're learning about from Sri Aurobindo and Gebser and Cowan and Beck, is that something that is occupying our minds, that is going to determine our patterns of behavior? Or is it a core intelligence that is emerging in us that enables us to recognize that which is emerging in others? Is the meme like a gene, or is it like a phenome? Is it an external form like a virus that occupies the gene, or is it the gene itself that is producing the value system? Is it self-driven, or is it environmental? I don't think they're clear about that. But I think that's okay. Nobody's clear about that. And so it's good for us philosophically to recognize some of these kinds of issues, philosophical issues, in the emergent consciousness in our society and in our minds, and we don't take anything as quite resolved. We keep that door of dissonance open a little bit so that we don't start to assume too much. I believe that's healthy. There's one phrase in here that I noticed that's kind of interesting. The only time I believe that this phrase occurs, I'll just mention it. The value memes do not emerge at inevitable stops on a train track through time, nor are irrevocably scripted within human biology. Well, this statement also begs the question, if consciousness develops from stage to stage, and if that is because there are psychological structures like language structures, like sight, you know, in evolutionary theory we understand that something like sight, the faculty of sight, is present in every living thing. So eyes have evolved along 49 absolutely independent lines of descent. So sight is ever present, and it is a faculty of consciousness. It doesn't matter in which species or to what degree it perceives. So language is ever present in the human species, because, as Chomsky tells us, there are language structures inherent in the evolution of the human being. Otherwise, we couldn't learn language. Otherwise, it wouldn't be omnipresent. So, if these social value memes emerge, and one cannot emerge without the other one having emerged, then isn't there a kind of inevitability in that? And isn't it inevitable because there are structures, psychological structures, that are part of the human package? And that package unpacks. But it unpacks in response to circumstances. Just like genes are triggered, the lactose gene is triggered by milk. It doesn't start working unless it's in the presence of milk. So there's, again, we see this environmental openness. There are no boundaries in the environment. Whether it's inner environment or outer environment, it's fluid. So everything reflects everything else, in a way. Then there's a curious next statement here. Instead of that, rather, he says, the primary driving force that has sculpted the spiral is activated in the dynamic interaction between our internal states and our external worlds. The primary driving force that has sculpted the spiral? Now, one thing that you don't find in psychology very often, and absolutely absent here, is metaphysics, in my experience at least. But there's a little glimmer of a metaphysical assumption. And when you really explore the theory of evolution, you find out that there are these metaphysical assumptions always there, from Spencer to Darwin to Huxley and on up to Mayer and Dawkins. They're there, but they're quite deliberately suppressed. So in our course on evolution, which finished a few weeks ago, and quite a few people here were part of, we derived a kind of pattern in the evolution of species that it may be helpful to keep in mind as we pursue the value means. Societies, and this is social psychology, right? Developmental psychology, that's social psychology. Societies repeat patterns with variations, but the patterns aren't permanent. They evolve. Societies are like species. Behaviors and structures evolve unique variations of themes. Now, these themes are being called value memes. But each of those cultures produces different expressions of those value memes. And that's another meaning of memes. The products of a particular level of social awareness are also known as memes. So television programs about exploring the universe are memes of our rational culture. You don't find them in the pre-rational culture. Behaviors and structures embody universal principles. So we started here with an outline of what we were going to explore. One of the things is developmental means as universal principles. But behind those is another range of universal principles, which Sri Aurobindo emphasizes as against all of the others. Those are the overmind principles: harmony, beauty, truth, power, freedom. These are a higher level of universal principles that are embodied in these paradigms and their mimetic expressions. From a certain point of view, you can understand it that way. That's the Sri Aurobindonian view. It's hardly recognized at all by Cowan, but it is recognized by Gebser. Nothing is permanent in the mind-life-body complex. Change is constant. Only ideas seem to have permanence. Rational forms, rational structures have permanence. And they're supposed to represent things in the world. But the things in the world don't have permanence.
What's this from?
This is from our Course in Evolution.
This is like a summary of the evolutionists.
This is the evolutionary framework, which I think is necessary to really understand the evolution of memes. And this is what we arrived at in our course. These are axioms. Ultimately, only the eternal is permanent. And it has no embodiment. Everything embodies it, but it itself is unembodied. This is known in Hindu mythology as the self. That, which is the fundamental principle of consciousness and force, is the motivator which develops structures to embody principles and forms of itself. So Sri Aurobindo would say that the vital being is infinite and eternal, and it exfoliates in all the different species an innumerable, practically infinite variety of itself. There are infinite forms of the way living things possess nature, eat and produce energy and reproduce themselves. And all of this infinity of patterns of relationships, social and otherwise, are the vital expressions of that which is eternal. That's the Aurobindonian view. So this is useful to us if we really want to understand integral psychological development. If at each level, each value meme is ultimately valuable as an expression of life and necessary in the hierarchy, and not only in the hierarchy but ever present, how can we perceive that, and how can we not judge that one is better than the other and get stuck at one level or the other in our identification of ourselves, in our self-identifying use of these memes? How can we get beyond where we are or where someone else is if we don't see that they're all expressions of the same thing? Just under different circumstances at different times. Because we have to be able to take, if we're going to look at Auroville in terms of developmental psychology, we have to be able to recognize and affirm widely divergent value systems and have a flexibility to move from one to the other. I mean, this yellow meme guy sometimes has a real problem with these blue meme guys. But what can you do? You know, ultimately, you have to work within those different structures. The process of embodiment is one of cognition at each level. So we know that cognition is going on in all of these memes, in all of these social relationships, all the time. People are constantly processing information. So is nature around. Through this information transfer between organisms and environment, structures are built. So if we're going to build an emerging green meme structure or a higher coral meme ideal society structure based upon the supramental, that's going to have to be a process of developing cognition. It's not going to come about by magic. You're just about to miss all the important stuff. Actually, this is just the introduction. So, these structures that are built that way maintain, reproduce, and improve themselves. Continually. Our social structures. The entities and their environment reflect each other. Nature is the last axiom. Nature explores as many variations of the possible patterns of manifestation at each level as possible for her expression. Nature explores as many variations of the possible patterns as she can for her expression. So Sri Aurobindo predicts many Gnostic societies with infinite diversities of expression. Is that what's emerging here, or is it just another old blue meme society? That's my daily question. So, Aru, would you like to move us towards some self-discovery?
You can give a brief of each of the memes, because I always thought that everybody knows it.
We've got a lot of the...
I brought a handout so that everyone can easily identify each of the memes. This is a... let me tell you what I've got here for you to hold in your hand. You can use it as you like. And we can stick those up on the wall if you want. This is a 3-page summary of each of the fundamental spiral dynamics memes. And then there is a little diagram on the back that shows the memes which are warm and the memes which are cool, those that are more I memes and those that are more we memes. And the principle that Bhavana introduced last week of the I, we, is summarized at the bottom here. And so this, you can just from time to time glance through here and you'll see, for example, orange meme, basic theme, act in your own self-interest by playing the game to win. And this is the individualistic, rational, scientific way of, and then there are four or five little bullets that characterize the behavior of societies that are based upon this meme. So if we're trying to find where we are individually in this framework and then where our societies are in this framework, this may help. And what do you have to show? Here are some...
They're all the same.
Okay. So...
I also have one that I think is similar, but it also describes the transitions between the names as well. So this might be another one.
So maybe if we break into groups, then everybody can have one of these, and I'll pass out these also, and you can go ahead and launch if you like.
So what I was thinking that, you know, we could all do is, Rod has given a little bit of, you know, the basic background in which all is emerging. And I think some of you are familiar, some of you are not familiar with the specific value memes themselves. But I think, you know, what we can try and do here is to explore this in an experiential context. You know, like for example, if you glance through these, they use colors like purple, red, you know, blue. So where do these, you know, memes exist in us in an experiential manner? You know, where are we and what happens when, you know, these memes interact with different memes and different people. So the whole idea is we would use cognition for sure because we can't negate that. It's pretty important as he was mentioning. But also what I think we're going to try and do is to include the experiential dimension and explore it using role play, theater, etc. So I'll just give you a brief background on what the aim of what we're trying to do and what we're doing. And I think the rest of the process is actually, we would be co-creating it together today. Okay. Let me get into what we are doing and then I'll go back and step back and say what is the context in which we are doing this. So I think what we'll do is, we'll divide ourselves into certain groups. Okay. And here I was originally thinking, you know, we'll take the purple, red, blue, orange and green, which is called the first tire. And somebody to represent the second tire integral. But I'm thinking slightly differently. What I thought right now is we'll first divide ourselves into different groups, but we'll first explore the first tire value memes, you know, within ourselves. Yeah.
We normally pronounce that word tier.
Tier, okay.
Tier. Right. The tiers, the first tier is the first six memes on your list.
Yeah, okay. Right. So once we do that, once we break into groups, you know, what we'll do is we'll take about 10 or 15 minutes within the group. And the idea is that the group members see as to how they can, I mean, basically it's like looking inward and how, because all memes are existing in us. You know, it's like whatever level we are, it's all there in us. And given India, we are constantly engaging with people with different memes, you know. So the question is, let's say, for example, three of us come in together in a group. So we kind of look, okay, where are we as far as this particular meme is concerned? And we, let's say, put together a small theater or a role play that will non-verbally express this meme in us. So it's not a use words, you know, the small rule that I'm, you know, bringing in here, if that's okay. So it's basically using action, theater, or even certain sounds, but not much of words. So that kind of forces in a way, you know, to go inward and see where this is. So what we'll do is, you know, we could take about 10 or 15 minutes for each group to independently work out something. And then we'll have each group come and present whatever is there, experiential, you know, living off that neem within themselves. And then I'll probably take you through it, you know, and then we could contemplate and then have, you know, certain padding exercises where we can go a little more in work. But just to keep this, I put this up on the website also. I'm looking at this for basically three purposes, you know, from my understanding, and there could be more. One is fundamentally to examine where this neem is living in us. That's I think is the fundamentally most important. So where does it actually experientially, emotionally, you know, where does it live within us? So that's the first point. The second very interesting point is, as we are observing ourselves and as we are observing the other groups presenting different memes, what is our reaction? Okay? Because that in my own personal experience is a very important indicator. Like for example, you know, let's say I'm at orange, green or whatever, and I'm interacting with a red individual, which is an aggressive, you know, person comes into my sphere, and I'm uncomfortable, I'm not able to have a good response. It, in my understanding, shows that there's some work that one individual needs to do there or the memes above that. Okay? So the second important point, you know, where we could observe the space between us that's happening as different groups present, what's our reaction to these different memes and where is it living in us? Okay? So that's the second. And the third overall idea is, I think he also touched upon a little bit, is to not to use any of these as a prescription. You know, because actually we are trying to get inward, you know, experiential, and to kind of evolve this as to where this is living within us. Okay, this is the basic idea. So is that okay?
There are 20 people here.
Okay.
And there are 8 demons.
I was first trying to explore the leaving page.
6?
Yeah, just the 5 first. This is purple, red, blue, orange and green.
The one page?
Yes,
we do. We need all of them.
Sure, we
can.
Okay, so there, we can easily divide into 5 groups.
Okay.
And each group has a meme.
That's right.
That means 4 people per
group. 4 people per group.
Per group.
Yeah. And how do you want to do it? Do you want to throw a
count off? 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3. Okay.
One, two, three.
I will be leaving.
You'll be leaving, okay.
You are leaving. You are not taking part. Okay.
You're four.
One.
Oh, actually, we need to count.
One. Five.
Two.
Three.
Four.
One. Two.
Three. You need 5.
Yeah, we need to count two.
Let's
5.
Go ahead. Let's go ahead.
Yeah, no, we need. Yeah, we need to count up to 5.
We wanted to have 5 groups, right?
Yeah, so if we count up to 5, it will come, correct?
Yes. Right. You have to count up to 5 to get 5 groups.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So 1, 2, 3.
It's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24.
That's okay. So all the ones would going together. So let's say the ones would be purple. Twos would be red. Threes would be blue. The fours would be orange. And the fives would be green.